Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
Aim and I have been working with global corporates and startups on what we term innovative new value chains, which are connecting new technologies, ventures, and corporates with new business models in the transport and energy sectors, as electric vehicles will revolutionize many industries. This podcast is one of a series where I speak to leading executives who are making the important transition to sustainable future. We have been working in the UK, Europe, and with programs in leading locations such as in Oslo and China, where there are high penetrations of EVs and massive numbers. Do get in touch if you would like to find out more, and don't forget to subscribe for future podcasts. Thank you.
So, welcome to Goals Question Time. Today I've got the pleasure of being joined by Sam Clark, who is the founder of GNUD. Hi, Sam.
Hi, good morning.
Good, thanks very much for joining us. I had the great pleasure of visiting your distribution centre a few weeks back and known you for a few months and that now, and it's great to have you on the podcast to explain how electric vehicles and are working in distribution in the last mile. So, if you could kick off by giving us a brief introduction to yourself first, please.
Yep, sure. Thank you for having me, by the way. So my name is Sam Clark. I founded a company called NEWT in 2009. NEWT with a G at the front, which is an acronym for Green New Transport. And the idea was that we wanted to create a fully electric delivery company, mainly in central London, to deliver mainly e-commerce type volume through the streets of central London, emission-free. So that business is 10 years old now. We've delivered over 10 million parcels by electric vehicle. We've got one of the largest, or if not the largest, 100% commercial electric fleet in the UK, and one of, if not the largest, privately owned charging infrastructure as well.
Great. So take us through a bit of the journey about when you started, what types of vehicles you were using 10 years ago, and how you were managing the energy sort of infrastructure and that then at that time.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it started a bit earlier than the business did in 10 years. I mean, I've been involved in electric vehicles for north of 15 years. And 5 of those years, a lot of it was spent in China, which you know well. The acceleration of the infrastructure there is probably unparalleled to anywhere else in the world. But in very early stages, I recognized there's an awful lot of electric scooters being used around the big conurbations in China as a means by which to travel quite effectively and efficiently using little good old standard lead acid batteries and removable pods and things like that. And really, when we set the delivery company up in London in 2008/9, a lot of it from that learning transcended into the London environment. So we had what we called cargo cycles, which were a bit like rickshaws. In fact, well, cargo cycles are a much more well-known phrase now than it was then, but a three-wheeled bicycle powered by an electric motor with removable lithium batteries that could carry a few hundred kilograms of weight or a meter and a half cubes worth of cubic capacity. And we started the business using cycle freight, and we ran an awful lot of volume, a lot of heavy volume, a lot of stationary type product through central London on bicycles. But we recognized that was not sustainable. Obviously, from an environmental perspective, it was reasonably sustainable, but from a commercial perspective, that's not sustainable. And we needed to diversify the fleet into other types of vehicle in order to deliver proper amounts of volume into the urban environment. So we started using, again, I'm using an old phrase now, a quadricycle, which is what the G-Wizzes used to be in the old days. They weren't quite electric vehicles in the same way as we know them now, but they had four wheels and a box, and they looked like a van. We had a number of those quadricycles running on lead-acid batteries, very similar to a forklift truck, really. And then over time, it diversified into the far more familiar Renault Kangoos and Nissan EV200s and those smaller OEM-produced electric vehicles now, and they are our mainstay on fleets. They've been around a long time, built by some of the big heavyweights in the manufacturing industry, and therefore reliability has been excellent, and the use case for them has been strong. And we don't actually use cycles at all anymore.
Right, and yeah, very far-sighted of you there, sort of seeing the China aspect, and I agree that China, they're over 300 million electric mopeds and that on the roads, and very ubiquitous, and they're fantastic for being environmentally friendly and very silent and that around the cities and that. When I go to China and that now, and seeing that back, as you said, 15 years ago, and bringing that in. So, and the situation now that you've got in London, how big is the fleet and the sort of operation you've got? And so you're trialing vehicles, a grid and all that as well. So you're quite at the leading edge now with the current state of vehicles.
Yeah, so the fleet, the new fleet is currently sitting at just over 70 vehicles. However, I should also have said really that my business was bought by Menzies Distribution in 2017, rather. And with that came a much larger company around the UK, with 1,300 vehicles of their own, albeit diesel presently. So we're just starting to electrify their fleet as well. So we've procured a further 48 vehicles for the Menzies fleet. So with the two companies combined, we're over 120 now. They are going all over the country as well. So we're putting twos and threes here and there as a lowest hanging fruit exercise in terms of electrifying the easiest bits we can first, and then we'll keep working through. But certainly the new fleet, the fully electric stuff in central London, yeah, it's about 70 strong. And so too is the infrastructure. We have about, we have 80 charge points now, actually, across two different depots, looking after those fleet of 70. And as you say, yeah, 10 of them in our V2G as well. So we're starting to expand our learning and technology into the concept of discharging energy from the vehicles at non-peak times, or even at peak times rather, and then charging at peak times. Sorry, I'll start that again. discharging vehicles at peak times, so we're putting energy back into the grid when the grid really needs it and we really don't, and then using off-peak times to charge our vehicles maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when the grid doesn't demands aren't so great. And that's a concept which has been around a while, but I don't think anyone in the country has 10 in one place. So it's very much a sort of pioneering site for the testing of that technology to see whether that's a viable solution to long-term electrification. Because I think that potentially vehicle to grid and the ability to smart charge everything so that everything has an algorithm associated to it to balance our charging requirements for the future, that should be sufficient to be able to manage the amount of power that the country is going to need for charging all these vehicles within the reasonable constraints of the power sources that we have available today.
Yeah, I think that's how are we going to balance the system when we get energy generated from renewable sources, which in the UK is going to be variable, wind and sun and that are going to be variable. We've got variable inputs. And then we're going to have a much higher proportion of the demand being for electric with the vehicles. And then the peaks and the troughs of that, when like all your vehicles come back at a particular time of the day, if they were all to charge at the same time, that would cause an infrastructure issue, not necessarily for the overall grid, but the local grid particularly is an issue in that, isn't it? That overall planning is a challenge for the industry and society.
Yes, and in that example, if we had 70 vehicles coming back and they all have 50% state of charge, well, rather than all 70 vehicles trying to replenish 50 to 100, go back up to 100%, you know, we have 50%, we could potentially, well, not all of it, but potentially discharge 40% of it back into the grid at peak time. So we are actually contributing positively to the challenge rather than negatively. So that is a concept whereby we're actually trying to mitigate those peaks and troughs and the seasonal or the daily fluctuations that renewable energy can provide. And then, of course, there's battery storage, which isn't something the business has looked at yet, but we may need to in terms of storing energy and harvesting energy on our own roofs as well. And again, trying to flatten off that line graph, that cycle of times when it's highly dependent and times when there's no sun or there's no wind, you know, we might be able to mitigate that by storing energy, and then we've got a more consistent amount of power as and when we need it.
Yeah. So the big challenge for society and the economy is that we switch to electric vehicles. You know, I'm seeing examples of now, you know, high penetration of electric vehicles in Oslo and Norway. I took a group of executives there back end of last year where penetration's now in high 40% of all the vehicles on the roads and in Oslo are that, and then very large numbers in China, as you sort of saying. I was in Shenzhen a couple of months ago, and 24,000 electric taxis in the city of Shenzhen, and all their buses, you know, being electric. And one car park I went to for the electric taxis had 180 fast chargers in there, 100 kilowatt chargers, and there were 10 of those just in one district of that in Shenzhen. So the size and the approach that needs to be taken to make this transition is going to be huge. How do you see the approach going to happen in the UK and Europe? And, you know, what are the things that we need to be able to do as a society and regulators and businesses to be able to make that transition as you've made?
Well, I think part of the answer to that you've alluded to in your statement. I think what we need to do a lot in this country is learn from others. It doesn't necessarily mean we need to replicate, but the Oslo examples and the Chinese and the Shenzhen examples, they're out there every day operating. You know, we need to understand that, learn from it, and see how that can be used, or, you know, if we're already doing methods of best practice that follows what they've managed to achieve successfully, and learn from it. But as I said, that's not to say we can just copy and paste that exercise into our little islands, because it won't necessarily work that way. There's behavioural patterns and different fiscal incentives in different places to incentivise in different ways. So, you know, Oslo is a good example where the economic strategy and setup is such that, you know, they are heavily incentivised to go down the electric route. I mean, we don't have the same rules in the same ways over here yet. We are trying to incentivise electrification, but it's a different meal on a different day, and it needs to taste different for us, I think. But certainly learning from the rest of the world, I think, is very important, and then continue innovating in our own space, as we do with funds such as Innovate UK that we've benefited from and catalysed many of our ideas over the years through funding streams that create innovation, that create products, that create things that then become mainstream, which is another positive journey. You know, the vehicles that we're procuring for the large amenities business are the same ones that we ran through an Innovate UK project, whereby we bought 15 of these vehicles and we changed the size and shape and designed them in a different way to make them more befitting to our needs, and it was so successful. We bought another 40 acres of them after the project ended. So right. Things like that that can be done as well that help us as a business being somewhat at the forefront, but also those behind us who are catching up can learn from that, learn from the information that we've gathered. It's all available on the London Data Store, because it's Mayor of London is one of our partners, for example. So that's publicly available, and people can use that to make their own informed decisions going forward.
Great. Well, Sam, really appreciate the insights you've shared with us on this podcast. What do you do to relax when you're not rolling out all of these vehicles and transitioning to the energy space? What sports or hobbies and that have you got?
I've got two young children, so that's one. I wouldn't call it a hobby, but certainly that keeps me busy. Hobbies: I do a lot of squash. Used to play a lot of rugby. And a lot of gymming and the DIY at home, I suppose. So typical stuff, really.
Good. Sam, really appreciate it. All the best with Newton's and all the projects that you're running there. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. Cheers, Andrew.
Please do subscribe for future podcasts. And if you like this broadcast, please give it a 5-star rating on iTunes or the platform that you listened on. Thank you.